I'm delighted to say I've been joined in the company by one of my true heroes from years gone by, and I can be fair to say also call him a broadcasting legend, the legend that is Barry Davis. Good afternoon, Barry.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Well, you've been commentating for so long, Barry, and then last Sunday you put your microphone down for the very last time. It would have been nice, actually, if you'd called a British victory in the mixed doubles final, but I'm afraid it wasn't to be, was it?
No, I'm afraid that Jamie Murray was not at his best, and Victoria Azarenka seemed a bit reluctant to come and greet the net when Jamie is very good at the net, and the other two were a very good partnership, mark you. The Austrian and the American, very, very, very good. I'd seen them a couple of times during the course of the championship, and I knew it was going to be difficult for Jamie and Victoria, but that's the way it goes.
Very much so. What was that feeling like, Barry, when you actually, well, virtually said goodbye, put the microphone down for the last time? You've obviously had a few days now to... Should
we
get over it?
Well, I mean, there was an element of emotion. As far as the British public were concerned, it was slightly different than it was for the world feed. I mean, Wimbledon was covered rather differently this year. Wimbledon itself was the host broadcast, and we were doing things for the world, and so couldn't respond. First of all, when Sue handed over to me, I could hear her, but I couldn't pick it up because I was on the world feed. And at the end, it was quite difficult because we were about to show the young British player Jack Draper and how well he'd done in the boys' singles final, and they started to come up too quickly for the awards, and therefore the BBC had to cut out very quickly because they didn't want to give away the result of what was going to fill the next 40 minutes of the programme. So that I mean, didn't make a huge difference to me, but it made a difference to people listening. So I never actually said goodbye. Liz Smiley said some nice things. The Australian doubles player of some repute, a great repute. But it was a strange feeling, yes, walking out of there and thinking, I'm not going to come into Wimbledon this way or come out of Wimbledon this way again.
Yeah. Have you sort of come to terms that this will be your last commentary, or are you going to sort of take a step back and think, well, actually, I might go back again and do a little bit more?
Well, it depends. I mean, what the cliche is, you should never say never. And it's a question of if somebody wanted to use me for something and asked me, then I would obviously consider it. While I'm still sufficiently compos mentis and fit and so on and so forth. But that offer has to come. I'm not going to go and look for it. Because I think, you know, it was the right decision to leave Wimbledon. But however sad, and there were moments during the course of the fortnight where I thought, I may be making a mistake here because I'm quite enjoying this. And particularly one match that I was actually watching young Draper, because the match I was about to do was coming on to court three. And suddenly, because of things around, it was moved to number one court, which, if you know Wimbledon, it's quite a long way away.
Yes, right.
Particularly, you've got to go down and through and round the back and out of the side if you're on the radio or television. And I thought, well, I made pretty good time. I got there before the match started.
Oh, really?
Which was a close run thing, but there we go.
Perfect timing. Remember, time is everything, Barry.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they were just running through how the players got to this final. I got there just in time for that.
When did you actually make your own decision to retire then?
It was a joint decision with the head of television sport and the head of sport overall, to wit, Philip Burney and Barbara Slater. And they came down here where you're sitting now and had a chat with me, and we talked about it and so on and so forth. And it was a mutual agreement. I had thought about it. Obviously, they had thought about it. I mean, not necessarily in detriment to me, but you know, people have to be given an opportunity. And if the older generation hang on too long, you can't build the hopes of the younger generation. So I understood that completely.
All right. Now, originally, you wanted to become a doctor.
I did.
And then it was a dentist. I think that was your second choice. Was that correct? Or was it the other way around?
No. You've got it absolutely right. I mean, I wanted to become a doctor from quite an early age. And I think probably from my respect as a kid for our family doctor. I didn't have to see very often. Nobody in my family did, I'm glad to say. But my parents knew him a little socially and so on. And you know, I thought that would be something I would like to do. But I was sort of involved in playing sport to no huge standard, I have to tell you. I put in Who's Who, that all sports, what was it, all sports, sadly, enthusiasm way ahead of talent.
What did you play?
I played football.
Oh, right.
The usual thing. I could have a good day as a winger, but like most wingers, I had days when I thought I could beat one more man before crossing the ball. Well, I wasn't George Best or anybody like that. But I missed out as a result of that. I didn't work hard enough on exams. I never understood. Although I got through the first stages of being a doctor, I didn't get the high enough figure. And somebody suggested that maybe that, you know, if I wanted to be a surgeon, which I did, which is ridiculous. I've got five thumbs on each hand, and I'm not very good at computers, which have taken over all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it would have been a bad decision either way. And dentistry was a huge mistake, and I knew that within 2 weeks of doing it. But then Her Majesty said, well, I think it's your turn for you to come and do national service. And I was one of the last national servicemen in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in during the Cuba crisis.
Oh, really?
So that was quite interesting.
Oh, right. I can really imagine that, actually. Yeah. So how did you actually get into sport then, you know, the broadcasting side of sport?
Being in the right place at the right time. While I was in Germany, I was asked to do some work for British Forces Broadcasting, BFN Cologne, as it was then called. And as a result of doing that, I thought I was just giving information to all the sports program, but discovered that they actually wanted me to talk about a few things and results and so on and so forth. So the bug bit, and I actually had a commanding officer who said to me when I left, as a full lieutenant, because I had extra time on because of Cuba. So that, by about 2 weeks, that got me a second pip for what it was worth. But I loved the army. And that was the other alternative. I could have stayed. I had a very good time. Never been as fit again in my life. But he actually said to me, my commanding officer, go out and give it a go. If you've got doubts about it and want to change your mind, come back and we can fix that. He said, but do give it a go. Otherwise, every time you look at that fellow David Coleman, you're going to say that could have been me.
Yeah,
he was certainly one of those from whom I learned a great deal, Mr. Coleman.
He was, I mean, I'm calling you a legend, Barry, but I think he can likewise be the
He set a lot of the standards. He and Ken Wolstenholme, they were very different. As people and in style of commentary, David was more forceful, but Ken had the line to beat every other line of any commentary at any time by simply stating, "They think it's all over. It is now," and the timing of the second part was brilliant. Just as Hurst hit the ball, and you could see it was going to
I remember it. Well, I don't remember it. Yeah. I was a little bit younger then, but I do remember it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, everybody can relate to that nowadays, can't they? As well,
yes.
More than anything. Yeah. You were on Match of the Day for a long time. Was it 35 years, I think? Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that right? Or well, round about then. Well, it was a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I went to the BBC. I had 3 years with ITV as a result of the World Cup. And if ITV hadn't been around, and people either forget or don't know that ITV were only about 2 years old when the World Cup came round. Mm-hmm. And the contract from FIFA was for both of the domestic companies, and ITV had to find three commentators. They had one, but he wasn't used very much because they didn't have many contracts for to use him on.
Oh, I see.
He was a guy called Jerry Loftus, and I got through various stages of doing commentary in front of a monitor and going to a couple of matches and so on. And I was one of the four. And but for the fact that the World Cup was here in 1966, you wouldn't be talking to me now. At least if we had met somewhere, you wouldn't be talking to me about the job I've done, the hobby I've had all my years.
You've visited so many places. We could be here all day going where you've been to. You only covered two FA Cup finals.
Yes.
And of course, you weren't expecting...
Wembley's a long way away, isn't it?
Yeah, it is wrong, isn't it? About 25 minutes. No. You only cut... I know, obviously, you had this rivalry. Was it a rivalry with Motti, or was it sort of blown out of proportion?
It was blown out of proportion. Yeah, I mean, used in different ways by different newspapers, and to some extent, I believe, used by the BBC, because it gave the BBC some publicity. And it wasn't the easiest from time to time, but you know, I couldn't sit on Motti's lap and he couldn't sit on mine. And he had he was doing well in the job in his style, and they saw no reason to change him until the two chances that I had, and then the chap who actually brought that change about left and went to ITV, and the person coming back decided to put John back in the seat, so that's how it went.
But you expected to come, was it the 77 Cup final?
I did only because I was told I was doing it by the boss at the time. What happened I don't know, except that I picked up a newspaper to read that that John had got it, or rather the headlines were Davis doesn't get cup final, so the some parts of media were expecting it to be me in the absence of David Coleman, who was in, out of contract and debating with the BBC. And so that one, yes, I was expecting to get that, and who knows if I'd have done that one, whatever. I'm sure David would have come back for the one afterwards, which he did. When he re-signed with the BBC, and then for reasons that I've never understood, he gave up commentating on football after the 78 World Cup final. And you know, Motti had succeeded him once, and therefore he became the guy to succeed him again.
I think your final appearance on Match of the Day, was it 2000? I'm going back now again, Barry. 2004, I think.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's right, at Manchester City. Against Arsenal.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the last. I assumed that was going to be the last. That's when I decided I wouldn't accept the contract which the BBC had offered. And I thought that would be the end of doing football. And it was, with one exception, because 10 years later, at the 50th anniversary of Match of the Day, I was invited back to do Crystal Palace.
That's
against
right.
West Ham.
Yeah, I remember that.
Which was lovely, and the reaction of people was charming in the extreme, in all areas.
No, it was.
And ironically, Motti, bless him, ended his Match of the Day career at Selhurst Park, and so did I.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but that turned out. And what's more, from my point of view, it was where I started for Match of the Day, because that was the day when I was in Leeds. Kenneth Wolstenholme wasn't well, and David Coleman worked out with laryngitis. So I was taken by car from Leeds to London to do a match which I hadn't prepared one thing. So it was good, interesting start.
Nothing like being thrown in at the deep end.
Well, it
wasn't. More than anything.
I mean, I'd done 3 years with ITV, but even so, it was quite a testing opening, yes.
Oh, I can imagine that. I say you covered so many different events, Barry. I mean, obviously the Winter Olympics, you know, Torvald and Dean. I remember, you know, I mean, that must have been an amazing place to be at, to see, to witness.
Yes.
I remember watching it in the early hours of the morning as well, and I think it got everybody riveted in the whole country as well.
Yes, I mean, it did. And then they came back, of course, ten years later. And I mean, I simply got into that because the charisma and feeling of quality that Jane and Chris exuded on the ice, it was difficult to see them produce that off the ice. They were two very shy people. He particularly, more than her. Mm. And somebody thought that I could be the person to bring them out. And to some extent, I mean, I treaded carefully because, you know, the media can get in the way at times. And as a result, I think I got some good reaction from them and became friendly with them and so on and so forth.
Yeah, very much so. I must take you back, sorry, Heysel. Yes. 1985. I mean, Barry, that must have been a horrific experience. I mean, you know, actually at home watching it was bad enough, but you went there to do a football commentary.
That's right.
And you came away with just more than a football commentary.
Yes.
How on earth did you handle that?
I don't know. When it had the added complication, as far as television was concerned, that Jimmy Hill, bless him, was on the Terry Wogan show. And if you recall, he sort of turned from that to introduce the European Cup final. And actually handed over to John, which of course I ignored and just carried on. But I wrote 6 or 7 scribbles bits as to how I was going to start and threw them all away and just said, I opened my mouth and hoped that what I was saying was right, and carried on for quite a long time, and then did the commentary on a football match, and reached a stage where, I mean, I think it's very questionable as to whether the penalty should have been given, but it was, and I, nothing against Liverpool, of course, I would have hoped at the onset that they'd win, but the thought of extra time was just, that was impossible.
Looking ahead now, or thinking now, should the game have gone ahead, do you feel?
I think my impression was at the time that they allowed it to continue because not everybody knew what happened. Mm. We didn't know fully what happened. I mean, there were only 3 of us there from BBC Television, John Shrewsbury, the producer, Bobby Charlton, who was the last person you would send off to go and see if he could find out. And we were greatly helped by Mike Ingham, who then became BBC Radio football correspondent, but at that stage was working with Peter Jones, who had that role. Mm. Mike would come and give us, you know, bits of information. But I was very conscious of the Chinese whisper feeling that, you know, that 2 people have died being passed to the next person could be 20 by the time it got down to me. Mm. And I was very much aware that people listening, you know, there would be sons and fathers, etc., etc., and the rest of the family sitting at home watching. And I was telling them there was a possibility that their kindred might have died. So it was, it's like nothing I've done before or done since. Well, I was then on breakfast time the following morning with that dreadful man who I don't want to put a name to, who's ran the Daily Mirror. And then I went and did a piece for CBS television in America with him and told him to behave himself. And he seemed to take credit for how the newspaper had covered it, and whereas it was much more serious than that. And I did say that morning, but I was very careful what I said during the event itself. I said that morning that Britain should pull out, that Liverpool should say they wouldn't compete again for a period of years or whatever, and the FA jumped in about the same time as Liverpool came to that conclusion.
That's right.
So that was good. It was very costly. It was actually more costly for Everton, who had a really good side at that time and had won the championship and would have been quite a team in Europe, and could well have gone on to win the European Cup. That's one of the extra sides of it, which from a football point of view was very tough on Everton.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Maradona, Hand of God. Mm-hmm. You were there, weren't you?
I was.
For that?
I was. I wasn't that quick in informing people as to what had happened, for the very good reason that I didn't know. You know, sometimes you can see things more easily on television than you do if you're looking out, and it's a question of, I mean, ideally you're looking at the monitor and looking at the pitch, but they can't always be aligned.
Okay.
So I was slow to get that, and I dismissed it as being blatant cheating. But you know, I made the mistake of trying to work out what it was, and suggested that there might have been an offside decision. They've been generous to me in time, the BBC, because they've cut out those three or four words I noted the other day. But they didn't cut out any words for the next one, because I think I got that right. Maradona's second goal.
That was the classic goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the classic goal. And I said pure football genius.
Which it was.
Yeah, but the word pure was very, very important to me.
Yes.
In light of what had happened before. I mean, I didn't think about it, but fortunately, you know, quite often I thought, did I say that? Did I say take it the wrong way? I did, yeah.
You say about not thinking of things, but Barry, you've come up with such, you know, absolute classics. The classic of all, I think, which again I watched to the early hours, the hockey gold medal, the Olympic Games 88, wasn't it?
Yes.
Imran Shawani, I can picture it now, when he scored with your classic. Where were the Germans?
Yeah.
Well, and frankly, who cares? Now, instantaneous.
Well, I mean, you couldn't. I never wrote things down.
You didn't?
No, never. It's become a bit of a cliche, but I've said it before, so I say it to you again, but you can cut it out if you like. That my whole attitude was to say what I thought. If I couldn't think what I wanted to say, try and stop myself from saying anything, and if I did say something, hope that my foot was sufficiently far removed from my mouth. And that was my philosophy. And I mean, I watched the goal being scored, I recapped the goal with the slow motion, and I thought to myself, went through the German defence like a knife with butter. So I said, where were the Germans? And then I thought, well, we're now 3-0 up, but they scored afterwards. And I thought, well, frankly, who gives a stuff when the Germans were? Because the boys are going to win this. And I got very attached to the team, although I was very lucky. I mean, I only did the final, because I was doing the gymnastics and Nigel Starmer-Smith was doing the major hockey. I did one of the semi-finals, but he did the England semi-final on the request to me of the head of sport. He thought that he should do it. I was totally sympathetic with his view. But I followed. I'd done the World Cup 2 years before in London. I did every match then, which probably Nigel should have done some of those. Anyway, by the by, the producers and editors make these decisions and one has to accept. But, you know, having said what I said, and I thought, well, as I say, who gives a stuff what happened there? So I said, frankly, who cares? because Great Britain were going to win it. And on October the 1st this year, it'll be 30 years since
88. 88, of course, yeah.
And there've been a few anniversaries of the event. And again, I've been invited to be with the team.
Splendid.
It's great. I mean, if I had to pick out one thing, I mean, people perhaps would be surprised I didn't pick out football or some of the other sports.
Sure.
But it was amateurs, gifted amateurs playing in a very professional way with an attitude to sport which I enjoyed so much. So determined and so on and so forth. But, you know, we've both just watched the World Cup. Mm-hmm. Some of it was good, particularly in the closing stages or after the group matches. But there was so much. I mean, no way should France have had the first goal because it was never a free kick. The guy just fell on the floor and the referee fell for it and didn't consult the VAR.
Yeah, sure.
And on the second one, the VAR got in the referee's way. I think he got the decision right first time. So basically, the first two French goals, they were the better side. I'm not disputing
sure,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
But and I had to see it afterwards because I was at Wimbledon on the day.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
But that sort of thing, I hated it. It's cheating. And I used to say so.
You did, very much so. Has there been a favourite event you've covered? I know also you mentioned about the hockey gold medal. I mean, you've done the boat race many times. You've enjoyed a lot of boat races, haven't you? Is there any other main events? I mean, if you had to sit down to me and say, Peter, there's one outstanding event, what would it be? Got you thinking.
Well, it's got me thinking. It's an impossible question to answer because there are six, seven or eight.
Okay. Just throw a few at me then.
Well, I mean, England's best performance on the football field that I've seen was against Holland in Euro 96. Wasn't a great Dutch team, but you know, the cliche is you can only play what you're offered in opposition. I can find the right things against them. The game against Germany was absolutely sensational. Sadly, we lost it. Maybe it helped to make the man who is now Gareth Southgate, if you see what I mean. I mean, I think it when you've had that much of a letdown and felt the country's eyes were on you, that must have been, in the longer term, not at the time, obviously, character building. Mm. And he's used, I mean, his character's come forward very, very well for the World Cup, and I'm delighted for him, and long may it continue. So that I would pick the first European Cup final, followed the 77 non-FA Cup final, which was Liverpool beating Borussia Mönchengladbach. There was a tennis match between Boris Becker and Joachim Nystrom, and Becker won it for the first year and saved match points and absolutely refused. He was always serving second in the final set, and he saved several match points, if my memory serves me right. Just wouldn't take anything off the second serve. You know, he'd miss it by that much, but it still would have been the same pace. And in the end, he won, and that was his attitude. When he lost eventually 3 years later, I happened to be sitting in Harry Carpenter's chair, standing in for him because he'd gone to a big fight, and I referred back to the I lost a tennis match, nobody's died, it wasn't a war, which he put things in perspective. Lots of other things, obviously the hockey as well. Torvald Lundin, first time round, second time round to some extent even more, because although Chris says I'm wrong, I believe they were cheated out of making it two goals, because while they may have broken a few rules, so did the others. And in terms of quality, they were much the best. For me, I could go on. I mean, there are lots of other things. I mean, I've been extremely lucky. I've been paid for a hobby. By doing other sports, which came to me not because I wasn't getting the football. I was asked to do mm-hmm. things, some of them before. It became clear that Motti was going to be fairly difficult to move out of the chair, you know, short of dropping a pill in his beer. you know, I think that actually all helped. Mm. And I don't know whether you remember, there was a series called Maestro that I did in the early 80s, which was an interview with a sportsman who retired. And
yes, it's coming to me now. Yes.
Stanley yes. Matthews, George Best, Billie Jean King, Gary Sobers,
right,
you know, various people. And I had a producer called Jeff Goddard, who had a great ear, and he was one of the early judges of the Young Musician of the Year to whittle it down to top 10 or whatever it was. And he would make me do a line, because I did the interview and I wrote the script and did the script with his, you know, consultation with him. And he would make me do a line. No, you're emphasizing that badly. He had cadence. And he understood all use of a voice. And that taught me a lot, which I think I was able to turn a bit to commentary. Maybe subconsciously initially, but when I look back on it, I realise how much of a help that was.
Sadly, actually. Mm. So what advice would you give to sort of commentate? I mean, I do commentary on various sports, Barry. Mm-hmm. I'd like some advice even now. anybody that's listening, I mean, you know, I want to say there's an easy art to commentary. There isn't, admittedly. But yeah, what do you feel overall would be the best advice?
Well, the first piece of advice I've always given people, because, you know, one or two, particularly one or two who've come from their sport and looking for a few tips as I saw it. I mean, the first thing is to be yourself. You can listen to other people and learn from other people. But when it comes down to it, you have to do it your way. I was told by Sam Leach, who was the boss, when I came to the BBC, to follow everything that David Coleman did, and I was sufficiently bumptious, or whatever the right word is, to say to him, you know, I'll learn from David, I'll learn from a lot of people, mm-hmm. but I'd rather fail as Barry Davies than succeed as David Coleman number two. So that's the first key. Second is, I think there's been a bit of a mix-up between radio and television. Through the experts, summarizers, co-commentators, call them what you like, mostly from the game, who played the game to a high standard, come in on a Tuesday to do a radio commentary, and perhaps on Wednesday a television commentary. Mm. And television has become a bit more like radio. There is much more talk than there used to be. To the point where I think it's gone too far. It's not a complaint. It's certainly not a complaint about today's commentators, because I think there are one or two very good commentators. So I'm not going to name them, because those I don't name might be a bit upset.
No, sorry.
But I do think it's a question of production. And I know some editors and producers probably would feel exactly the same as I do. But maybe they don't get the opportunity to exercise their authority in the matter. You know, when I first came in, producers would say, "Shut up, we've had enough of you, let's hear," you know. And I think that's important. And however big the person, it's got to be prepared to be told. Go and argue with the producer afterwards. But, you know, there can be too many words.
Well, actually, very good point. Barry, finally from me, what does the future hold for a certain Barry Davies?
Who knows?
You did say if something came in, you'd get back on that microphone.
Yeah, I mean, if I had any sort of regret, I would like to have done more ceremonial commentary. I did opening ceremonies for the Olympics. I did the Lord Mayor's Show for a dozen years. I did a few things that All the Queen's Horses, which was a thing to one of the anniversaries of Her Majesty. But for a change of where the producer who wanted me had gone, he went to Whitehall from from Windsor, and I was living in Windsor, mm-hmm. and I was going to do the job that Brian Hanrahan did, mm-hmm. And the sort of closing stages of when the cortege was being taken, Queen Mother made her last journey, as it was put up, through Datchet. I would, if somebody came and asked me to do that, I would love it, but I accept that, you know, I'm probably too old in the tooth now to do it. I've always loved interviewing, and I've always loved putting a script to something or voicing somebody else's script, which I did before the Wimbledon final this year. Very good script by a girl called Kate. I enjoyed that challenge. And I would love to be asked to do a few things like that, but I don't know whether I will. Possibly a commercial might be quite nice to do.
Oh, I think so. Any particular brand?
not too fussy, but...
I think you'd make a wonderful, wonderful commercial voiceover or anything else. Barry, it really has been an absolute pleasure, and I mean that also from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much for speaking to myself. And all I can say is the very best of luck for whatever happens in the near future. And I dearly hope that we do hear your wonderful voice again.
Oh, well, that's very kind. Very kind indeed.